From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of April, 2025. It's Earth Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in West Bend, Wisconsin. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss big data. We'll actually hear from USDA's Rod Bain about big data and how it is transitioning into the farm in a new and different way that hopefully will be cross-platform and open in a way that makes it both available and secure. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Oh, and along the way, we'll hear from the state statisticians in Iowa and Minnesota and Illinois and Indiana about crop conditions in their regions, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at 475 and three quarters, 6 cents lower. July at 483 and a quarter a bushel, down 6 3/4. And new crop December corn, $4.58, down 6.5 cents. May soybeans, 5.5 higher at $10.35. July 1046, up 4.5. And new crop November at 1026.5, 3/4 cents higher. Bean meal at $291.90, a dollar lower. The bean oil at $47.58, down 24 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the July, 2 lower at $5.50 1/4. The hard red at $5.58 1/4, down 5.5 cents. Live cattle futures, $2.52.5 higher. Feeder cattle up $2.10 and lean hogs at $2.22.5 higher on this Tuesday afternoon. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com in West Bend, Wisconsin now joins us on a Tuesday to discuss the marketplace. Looked like there was trade happening, though it's been quieter than it has been in recent weeks and months, I suppose. Naomi, tell me about what you saw in Chicago.
Yeah, so looking at grain markets for the past few days, the corn and bean prices have been up near some shorter-term resistance levels. And just without any lack of strong friendly news to take prices through those short-term resistance levels, seeing some back and fill action today for corn, finishing about 6-7 lower. Beans going to be finishing on the positive side, but still range bound. I think traders were keeping an eye on the crop progress report, which yesterday showed that 12% of the U.S. corn is planted, just a little bit ahead of the five-year average of 10%. And beans are now 8% planted, slightly above the five-year average, which had been around 5%. But as you know, a lot of folks excited to plant beans earlier than in years past. So we've got to balance that as well. But it's been a pretty quiet market day for a Tuesday. Not too many things happening with outside markets either.
As you look forward to the month of May, of course, we'll have the new crop supply and demand tables due out, I believe, on Monday. It feels like it's the 11th, but I didn't check the date. Can you tell me what your expectations might be?
Yeah, so looking ahead to that, I think in general, a lot of times we can see that seasonal push higher for grain prices into early May. And then that May WASD point, to your point, oftentimes can be kind of a short-term negative factor because the USDA will use the acres from the March 31st report, and then they'll throw in probably a record yield number and make it on paper look like everything is just hunky-dory and just fine. So a lot of times grain prices have a tendency to retreat lower then after that May WASD report until we get some excitement with a summer weather scare or heat coming in the forecast that makes the market price work then a little higher into the end of May after that fallback. So I'm kind of guessing that that's what's going to happen again this year. But again, all of the weather forecasts are going to be paramount here going forward, and we'll keep an eye on weekly export sales later this week to see how demand is going, and of course, keeping an eye on all of the geopolitical news.
It is always interesting in May to see what USDA does do with acreage, because once in a while, if things are late enough, it will manage to adjust yield. It won't change acreage at that point, but it might adjust yield down. And the 12th day of the month, every month, is the last day that they can release or will release a World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate. It's released on one of 5 days, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, or the 12th. I checked. It's not the 11th. It is Monday the 12th. So they'll have time to take a look at that, which means, as you suggested, that the weather will be really important. The other place that weather remains very important is with the Safrina or South American corn crop. It managed to get into the last part of April in pretty good shape at this point. It's Earth Day the 22nd. They're still getting rainfall there, and I'm wondering how concerned that has you. You are now about the size of that crop.
Well, I would say this. I don't think it's going to be anything larger than is currently projected, because the USDA has it as a sizable crop. The fact that the weather has been good down there is, I think, part of the reason why corn prices here have not been able to clear that $5 value level in the short term. But I think also, though, you know, if we have that record crop, good. The world needs it, because corn demand is that strong, and we'll still have some potential tighter carryout situations until we get our crop that's just getting planted now fully harvested. So there's a lot of weather to watch, not only between South America, but here in the United States as well, and some of the weather forecasters still harping about the potential for drought this summer. I heard it from two different sources today that they're still looking for a hot and dry summer in the U.S., primarily for the western Midwest. And so that could, you know, just really zap the potential for a record yield here and keep corn prices supported here in the short term.
We've had a couple of days to look at the cattle on feed report. How did the markets react to begin with, and are they following through? And what has you concerned about the size of the herd in the United States, if anything?
Well, market prices, since that report came out, we have been able to see the marketplace kind of go sneaking back up and retesting the highs from early April on the live cattle side. On the feeder cattle side, though, something really important to note was that yesterday, the August feeder cattle contract posted a bearish key reversal after testing a shorter-term downtrend line. Today was an inside trading day, again, testing that downtrend line. We filled gaps. So if the live cattle complex, the feeder cattle complex, if they cannot find any big new news this week on demand or stronger cash, we might see the market have a simple correction lower. And actually, seasonally, that is a tendency to have, is a tendency for what occurs. Seasonally, cattle prices work a little bit lower until about the first, second week of May, before having a recovery rally higher. So if we don't get any friendly news this week, just look for a simple back and fill action. Overall, the trend on the long-term charts, though, still remains higher.
Anything else before I let you go?
Well, again, not really specifically, but we have to always keep one eye on all the geopolitical news that's out there. There were some thoughts that maybe we're going to be having some better news coming with China and trade. That came over the news wire just a little while ago from U.S. Treasury Secretary, so we can see if there's any follow-through good news with that, and keep an eye on the weather and markets, you bet.
Thank you much, Naomi.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. We talk with her each Tuesday. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. In today's agricultural news, USDA layoffs and office consolidations are raising bipartisan concern in Congress. Staffing levels could be pared by nearly 10% or some 9,000 starting by early May, with remaining staff relocated to three hubs around the country. That's according to briefed USDA officials who are cited in a report by the Government Executive, a government business news daily. The layoffs and office consolidations are raising big concerns in farm country, and with lawmakers on Capitol Hill, like top House Ag Democrat Angie Craig of Minnesota.
In Minnesota, and I know across this country, Haphazard layoffs at USDA are jeopardizing our ability to serve farmers and keep our ag system the safest and most productive in the world.
Secretary Brooke Rollins has stressed staff cuts will target duplicative support roles and unneeded management layers. That as some D.C. offices are moved closer to farmers, ranchers, and foresters, minimizing USDA's capital region footprint. Longtime GOP Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa is slow to pass judgment, but is also concerned.
It is of concern, but I'd have to study to see how farmers are being served. But we think that rural America can't be left out just because it's rural America.
FSA office consolidations and ERS and NIFA relocations sparked objections in 2019, while new staffing cuts await agencies like NRCS and the Forest Service, government executive reported. NRCS received billions of dollars through the climate-related Inflation Reduction Act targeted by the White House. Reversing IRA-boosted staff levels is a stated goal that would cut nearly a quarter of NRCS staff. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 12% of the corn crop around the nation has been planted, 10% is the rolling five-year average. Of that crop, 2% has emerged. That's on pace with the five-year average. 8% of the soybeans have been sown, 5% is the rolling five-year average. And winter wheat is headed at the rate of 15% across the nation, 13% the five-year average. The condition of that crop said to be 38% good and 7% excellent. That's down from the 41 and 6% in the previous week. Now here are statisticians from across the Midwest with updates from their regions.
This is Rebecca Alter, agricultural statistician for the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office. Planters were rolling across much of the state before being slowed by precipitation. In addition to planting corn, soybeans, and oats, fieldwork included tiling, building waterways, and spraying when winds allowed. Topsoil moisture condition rated 6% very short, 22% short, 69% adequate, and 3% surplus. Corn planted reached 18%, 3 days ahead of last year, and 5 days ahead of the five-year average. 11% of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 3 days ahead of last year, and 1 week ahead of the five-year average. Oats seeding reached 68% complete, 5 days behind last year, but 3 days ahead of the five-year average. And that's this week's report of crop progress and conditions across the state of Iowa. For the USDA NASS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
Hello, everyone. This is Brad Summa, director of the USDA NASS Heartland Region, and this is the Illinois Crop Progress and Condition Report. Topsoil moisture supply was rated 1% very short, 7% short, 72% adequate, and 20% surplus. Corn planted has now reached 7% compared to the five-year average of 11%. And for our Illinois soybean crop, it has now reached 10% planted compared to the five-year average of 7%. The winter wheat across Illinois is now headed in 5% of the fields compared to the five-year average of 6%. And the winter wheat condition was rated 1% very poor, 6% poor, 38% fair, and 49% good, and 6% excellent. For the Illinois cattlemen, the pasture condition was rated 3% poor, 33% fair, 40% good, and 24% excellent. Again, this is Brad Summa, director of the USDA NASS Heartland Region, serving the farmers and ranchers in Missouri and Illinois. Have a great week, everyone.
I'm Nathaniel Wernske with USDA NASS. This week, Indiana, topsoil moisture rated 92% adequate to surplus, subsoil moisture 84% adequate to surplus. Corn and soybean planted started with 2% of the corn crop planted and 3% of the soybean crop planted. Winter wheat jointed was at 30% behind last year and the five-year average. Winter wheat headed was at 1%. The crop was rated as 69% good to excellent. And that's this week's report of crop progress and conditions across the state of Indiana. I am Nathaniel Warnsky for USDA NAS.
One other state to update, the number 4 corn-producing state in the nation is Minnesota. Corn planting ramped up there, especially in the southern part of the state, while farmers in the state saw just 4.1 days suitable for field work during the week. Topsoil moisture supplies were rated 4% very short, 20% short, 62% adequate, and 7% surplus. Corn planting was at 9% complete across Minnesota compared to 7% last year. The 5-year average is 4%. Soybeans were sown at the pace of 3%, a couple of days behind last year, but ahead of the 5-year average of 1%. Our thanks go to the statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County farmer Tim Gleason. Up next, we'll explore big data. It continues to grow as part of ag operations, whether in the field, the research lab, or through some resource offering. How far has ag come in the development of big data, and what are some projects and programs that could feature big data in the future? USDA's Rod Payne takes a look.
Farmers, you might actually remember when the big data revolution started in agriculture.
Years ago, probably the initial source of big data was on harvesters. Yield monitors were one of our first big data generation machines that we had on farm.
Ag Kendall Kirk of Clemson University also reminds us that when this first step in the evolution of big data on the farm took place,
the cloud computing opportunities where cost has gone down to enable some of that, those weren't there. Connectivity was not there.
So if a producer wanted data from their harvesters and their field monitor displays,
it wasn't to put it on a jump drive. Instead, it was to put it on an SD card, and in some cases, floppy drives even prior to that.
To say the systems of agricultural big data and the tools used to collect it have come a long way is perhaps an understatement, especially with advances in connectivity.
And all of a sudden now you've got not only data coming from a yield monitor that shows you, for instance, during grain harvest, how much grain did you harvest from this area of the field versus that area of the field, but now we have sensors on our planters. We have sensors on our irrigation systems. We have soil moisture sensors that we install in the field. We have soil information that we collect with machines such as electrical conductivity.
Another evolution in big data has been how this information is managed. Kirk acknowledges that out of necessity, as technology advanced, most big data was collected initially through proprietary systems, proprietary as in company and by piece of equipment.
It's sort of been an organic growth of how it needed to develop, and now what we're seeing in the ag side is similar to what I think we've seen a lot of energy directed towards ISOBUS on connecting implements to tractors, to where we have sort of standard communication across those machines, and we're starting to see the same thing on some of the data.
Research continues to advance compatibility of big data and expand available resources for all. One of those projects is called AgStack. Kendall Kirk at Clemson University is among the research partners in this effort, along with the Linux Foundation, IBM, and others. Samir Johal of the AgStack Foundation says developing an easy, accessible system to search for big data in the ag spectrum will require open source operating systems as a pre-competitive foundation underneath applications.
Applications can be developed much cheaper and faster, so time to market and cost to market advantages are abound in the private sector.
In addition, this would create interoperability among applications. In other words, the ability of farm-based big data apps talking to each other, whether the source or program is private or public-based. For instance,
equipment data from tractors and equipment for combines and such. There's also a lot of data besides that from different government agencies that is published. There's a whole bunch of data being published about from satellites that are public. There are weather systems that are entire country data is being published. So there's a lot of public data that is being published. And then there's a lot of private data that is connectable.
So think of such a system being plug and play. One example is
equipment like a tractor could communicate with a sensor on the field, like a moisture sensor, without having to build proprietary software to do so, as long as both of them had connectors for that particular open source software, which being free is easy to do.
Another is an AgStack Foundation, Clemson University collaboration called AgRec, a big data hub for cooperative extension information on agronomy and other topics.
We're enabling that sharing to happen much more efficiently. People can search and find what they're looking for. They can filter based on certain criteria. Without such an information hub, accessing this information becomes really difficult, even though it's available.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. We're joined now by Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. It is a beautiful day here. In your part of the world, do you have sunshine as well?
Yeah, it's pretty nice across a lot of the U.S. With some mild April weather that I think everyone's enjoying.
Tell me about the weather that producers will be facing the next 7 to 10 days as they continue to plant corn and soybeans across the Midwest.
Well, we are going to be looking at definitely the western and northwest areas of the Corn Belt getting into some precipitation. While short term, as we go here through the next 48 hours or so, we'll see a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity from northern Illinois across parts of Iowa and in eastern Nebraska and Kansas, but it won't amount to a lot. But as we get to the end of the week and into the beginnings of the weekend, we're going to see an area of rain and thunderstorm activity that will extend from Texas north through Oklahoma, Kansas, a lot of Nebraska, a lot of Iowa, and getting into portions of Minnesota and Wisconsin. Now, that western Corn Belt region, I think, is going to have the best chance of getting wet. A lot of the eastern and central Corn Belt, it's only going to be scattered shower activity.
This is a continuing series of storms that have crossed the Corn Belt. Is there another one after this following one?
We likely will. This will be especially true towards the middle of the week after this one. They're spaced apart about every 4 or 5 days, and we don't think that's going to change anytime soon, at least as we go in through that first week of May. We don't see anything that's going to cue up a big shot of really cold air coming through. So this is mostly going to be in form of rain in most areas, which you would hope as we get here towards the end of April, that's how it's going to go. But you always got to worry about a late season, a shot of cold air. We don't see that here, at least over the next week to 10 days.
Are these rainmakers heavy, or are they in the half to an inch and a half range?
They're in the latter, as you talked about a half inch to an inch and a half. You know, you're going to get some pockets of some of the heavier thunderstorms that are going to do a little bit better than that. I think the areas that we see having the heaviest rainfall will be from the central and east central counties of Kansas, north through the central and east central parts of Nebraska into western Iowa. Now, we're also going to see another area of rain in the southern areas that are pretty wet. We are going to see more rain in Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, down into those areas. But we're kind of splitting these rain patterns going south of the central and eastern Corn Belt and affecting those western areas, but not going through the middle.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.